Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. As we ride the powerful waves of change occurring in our economic, social, political and physical environments, as we witness many acts of suppression and division perpetrated by power-hungry world leaders, governments, politicians and greedy corporations, as our jaws drop in disbelief at the horrifying hubris of presidents and prime ministers whose blatant cheating, lying and willful disregard for the planet and its people make travesties of the words leader. Two questions arise among the many that are urgently demanding answers. How do we forgive the unforgivable? And how can we rediscover what we as a species seem tragically to have lost, the power of union? Dr. Anita Sanchez is a powerful visionary business consultant of Mexican, American and Aztec heritage who has woven her knowledge of indigenous wisdom, business and science into her global consulting and training work with world and corporate leaders. She's been doing that for more than 38 years. A member of the Transformational Leadership Council, the Pachamama Alliance and Bioneers, she's also the best-selling author of The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times, in which she reveals the prophecy entrusted to her by a global collective of Indigenous elders. Four guiding gifts that can help us remember the power of unity, guide us to transformation and wholeness, and enable us to live in deeper harmony with all of humanity. Dr. Anita Sanchez welcomes us now. Hello, Dr. Anita.
Hello, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Now, let's start by talking about where you come from. I mean, you come from a family that, while economically poor, was rich in Mexican, American, and Aztec Indian heritage. You were the first in your family of over 100 first cousins to earn a doctorate degree. And you've since spent almost four decades sharing Indigenous wisdom with executives and their teams all over the world. And now you've written a best-selling book that calls upon all of humanity to remember who we are and how to work and live together. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind the Four Sacred Gifts.
Yes, the Four Sacred Gifts, it was truly an inspiration. It actually came out of a time when, in the 90s, when I was actually feeling pretty desperate, feeling like that all the work that I was doing in diversity and inclusion and global corporations, women weren't rising to the top fast enough, people of color were being overlooked, and white men who were just a little bit different also not, you know, being looked at. And so I just know what to do. And I always have volunteered my time, so I happened to be volunteering with some young people, the American Indian Science and Engineering Society, and it was at this event, Sandy, that the universe provided, as it always does, where in my angst and my asking elders who were there, you know, what should I be doing, what should I be doing, there was actually in our presence a hoop, a prophecy that came from 27 different elders around the world. And it was at that I was given these four gifts, not just for me, not just for the 400 people present, but for all humanity. And I began using them and using them and using them. And what happened about 6 years ago, both with the death of my mom and also with the incredible separation as you opened the session, the incredible separation and challenges in every sector happening, it became clear to me that these gifts that have been so beneficial to me and to others who I coach and work with and in communities and corporations, that it was time that they needed to go out in a book. And so I entered the whole arena of being an author, which was not my realm. I love consulting and training, but this is a gift that was meant for everyone.
The first of the four sacred gifts is the gift to forgive the unforgivable. Daily, daily, if not hourly, we are confronted by more and more just unspeakable pieces of news, acts, the things, as I said, you know, we've got to the point where our jaws drop in horror and we can no longer believe that these things are happening. It must be getting harder and harder and harder to forgive the unforgivable. Can this gift that you were given really help us reach that place? Because everyone I see seems to be suffering from, you know, compassion fatigue, and to the point where they're just kind of throwing their hands up and backing off.
Yes, I think that's part of the problem of the pain. When we're hurt or feel mistreated and seeing, you know, just the pain of all the things happening to loved ones and the earth, and we're so caught in all of that that our response is to close off, is to either bury it or to blame others, or, you know, to just hold on to that. And it's the very last thing that we should be doing, because we were meant to be whole and alive and healed. And so this forgiving the unforgivable really cuts through when you use that, cuts right through the heart of it, which is underneath all that hurt and mistreatment and anger and resentment is really love. That's what we're experiencing, is this incredible pain. And rather than close off to all that, we need to go through it. And forgiving the unforgivable is one of those paths. It's a path, you know, it's more than just an antidote. It is a path to freedom. And it was that for me, to work through some really hard childhood kinds of abuses, with 9 years of sexual abuse, and then the murder of my father, which was racially motivated, which sounds like a lot of things that are happening right now too. And what was these gifts that I realized belong to each of us. We already have them. But to look at that as a way to get freed from the prison of the hurt of what has happened in the past or happening right now, so that we can use all of our energy for what we want to create, rather than anger, resentment, hurt, closing off, charging others with the very things that we don't want to experience. So forgetting the unforgivable is not easy, Sandy. It takes some work. So sometimes it's starting with little hurts and mistreatments. But I'll tell you, with all the things happening in the world, we've got to move on those little ones so we can get to the big ones, so that we can be free to use our energy to create a life-giving world, to be part of that we so desperately need, rather than creating more separation, more hurts and mistreatments.
You know, I mean, there are layers of forgiveness I've found, you know, in my life. I can get to a point where I can forgive this and I can forgive that and I can, you know, those people and you name it. And I'm still working on one in particular, which every time I look at it, and I know to be free, I have to forgive that. I have to forgive that person. But still, I haven't got there. I want to talk a little bit more in a minute about those ones that we find the hardest of all to give. And reading your book, you know, I started the book, which is a fabulous book, by the way, absolutely fabulous.
Thank you.
And when I read about your father being killed, you know, I mean, it was a kind of, I won't say a random act, but I mean, he was the random person in a place where, you know, it wasn't aimed at him, but he's the person that got murdered. And I was thinking that, yes, I can understand you having to get to a place of forgiving the murderer. And then I read on, and my understanding opened up even more when you confessed that you felt so much guilt around your father's death because you had been secretly wanting him to go away in one form or another. And then you revealed the years and years of sexual abuse. And at that point, my jaw dropped, because I'm looking at forgiveness from, you know, the first layer, you forgiving someone who killed your father. And then I'm having to look at it from an even deeper layer of you having to forgive your father and you having to forgive yourself for the guilt and everything else around that. I mean, how on earth did you manage that?
Well, that's what's the wonderful part about that, in that you don't do anything alone. And so what happened from having so much hurt and trauma so young is that I had built this wall. I call it the wall of separation, the illusion of being separate. It was going to keep out all that bad stuff. None of that bad stuff was going to happen to me because I had this wall up. But what happened very quickly, even as a teenager, I began to see that wall was pretty darn good about keeping out people, things from hurting me, but it was also keeping out the good things. And so as I began to feel that it actually, the anger, the hatred, the hurt, the resentment does nothing to the other person. I mean, at that point, the murder of my father was in a prison for a lifetime. My father was dead. So all of this stuff going on in me was actually hurting me. And what I realized is that I really want to love myself and find that I am worthy. And others were starting to see things in me that I had forgotten, because here's the thing about pain, and it's a lot, so much of it is happening right now for so many people, is that I began to identify myself with my pain. So I am, you know, an abused child. I am the victim of abuse. I am the daughter of a murdered father, race, really. I am not any of those. Those are circumstances, not easy ones, tough ones, that I experience. But who I am is a whole human being, worthy of love, being loved, and loving others. I'm a spirit as well as physical and emotional. And what happened is that I realized that this gift, when these elders get reminded, because it's really remembering, because we all have these, but reminding me of this gift and to use it, is that it really began to open up and drop this illusion of separateness, began to open up to realizing that it was imprisoning myself, that all this energy being used in holding on to things that had happened years before was not doing anything about that, but just locking me up from being present. Present to use my energy for now, present to make choices out of the now. And if I could say another part of this, it was so important to me. I had the wrong idea about forgiveness. And maybe others are brighter about this, but I really thought if I forgave, that somehow, again, because I identify with it, that I would lose myself. That's who I was. I also thought that forgiveness meant that I forget. And then that I was weak or even disloyal to other women who have experienced this, or maybe even experience it now, the abuse, or, you know, just on and on, all these false things about forgiveness. Because forgiveness really is understanding that I am worthy of being loved and loving. I am worthy of using my energy for the here and now and for what I want to create, and not be locked up into what did or did not happen in the past. And as I began to love myself, to show myself that I was worthy of far more than just always looking backwards, is that it also made the whole process of forgiving the murder of my father and ultimately my father himself. What I think about, like, 41 years old murder, mistaken for a black man, where earlier that day a black man and white man had a fight, and the white man returned and fired 3 bullets through his head and killed him on the spot. He was 41 years old. Yes, he did horrific behavior. I do not, you know, at all condone his behavior. However, he never got to reconcile his life. And as an adult, I realized he may never have reconciled his life. But for me to be filled just with all of that angst and anger does not serve me. And, you know, I truly do wish him well. If there are other lifetimes, and I know people have different beliefs about that, but that I really, you know, I really do forgive him. But that forgiveness does not mean that I don't still seek to change systems and structures that are, unfair and hurtful to people, it doesn't mean that I don't create and collaborate with other people of all races and cultures to find our connection, to remember that we are all one world, we're one human race, we're all beings that are worthy of love. And so it's just that power to forgive the unforgivable, I say it's just one of the strongest gifts. And these elders whose spirit told them, use these four. This one I use every day. So be compassionate with yourself. I hear you saying you still have one, and I want the listeners to be compassionate with yourself. As we can be compassionate for ourselves, we also then fill our cup to have more compassion for others. As we continue to do this and forgive the little things, I truly have seen and experienced from the C-suite down into the communities on different parts of the world, people are able to get free. And I'll tell you, every day waking up with that freedom of no longer saying, I am, the survivor of sexual abuse, or I am the survivor of my father being murdered, racist, all this, instead, I am a whole human being who does still fail at times, but I recognize it so fast because I'm using the gifts, and this gift is just so powerful. So have some kindness for yourself, and what I found is just continuing to practice. Sometimes it's on the little things, but do that. But just keep practicing, and you find, there's just so many supports for us to be able to be wholly alive and being able to create the kind of positive change, the kind of world we want for our children, the others' children, all species' children. And, that's a powerful place to stand. I enjoy each day, even with all the challenges. So all the facts to the contrary, forgiving the unforgivable is possible. I've seen it so many times, and it needs to be awakened in all of us.
Beautifully said. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is transformational leadership and corporate consultant Dr. Anita Sanchez, whose best-selling book, The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times, shares the prophecy and wisdom of the elders and their timely message of unbreakable connection. We'll be back with more from Dr. Anita Sanchez after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Anita Sanchez, as you were talking, I was thinking about some of the things that I said earlier and that I've read in your book about separation and division, and how it's very easy to be unforgiving when you feel separate from others, when you don't even regard them in the same way that you regard your friends, you know, then they've got nothing to do with you. They're totally separate from you. We tend to demonize people all the time. And yet, you talk a lot about the Indigenous peoples. You talk about changing the stories to those of empowerment and connection. You write about the 2%, you know, the Native Americans, who are only about 2% of the total population of the United States, and how much wisdom they hold about how to survive genocide, how to survive their land being taken, how to survive institutions that hold them down, how to survive, you know, the way that they've been treated, some of the worst kinds of behaviour that man can, you know, use against man. How easy is it for the Indigenous peoples to keep going in the face of all of this separation, all of this division, all of this demonizing that happens, that's aimed against them?
Yes, and that's why it's so important for this wisdom to get out, because we have practicing, you know, for millennia, our traditions, the original knowledge about our oneness. And that's what the second gift, the power of unity. Because when we need to all look at our assumptions and our worldview, and to be Indigenous, and there's many different traditions all over the world that's called Indigenous. However, one of the uniting things about the Indigenous people, who almost all, as you said, have had to survive genocide, continue to have lands and sacred sites taken, so many problems, is that, but the worldview is that we keep coming back to, is that we're all one. And I remember growing up, my elder, my uncle, would share with us as we sat on the floor as kids, and we just lean in and listen as you talk about what it meant to be a whole human being. To be a whole human being is to live knowing your connection between yourself, other people, the earth, and spirit. And that if you ever hurt any one of those, you hurt all of them. And when you do good things, loving things, caring things for people, earth, or spirit, then you're doing it for all of them. And that is so core to understand our connection. And so, yes, it's hard to endure, as any people, to endure hardship, whether it's, you know, killing, loss of land, damage to the water, all the different things that are happening. However, when we hold on to this understanding that science is also showing the elders, yes, they're right. You know, when we do something here to hurt the earth, well, we're hurting it halfway around the world, because the winds take that when we use poisons on our earth. Whatever we do to ourselves, we're actually doing to the earth and to spirit and to others. So when you have that, then I won't say it's hard. It actually is an energy source, this unity. Because even talking to you right now, I know, yes, I'm focused on you and the questions being present for your listeners. However, I know if every breath I feel gratitude for the trees, the plants, and transform the carbon that I send out into oxygen that I can breathe, that I hear your messages that you're sending out, have been doing for some time. None of us are alone. We have so much support. So when you know that you're part of the web of life, not separate from, when you realize you're part of the earth, when you realize that whether it's in institutions, organizations that you're a part of, rather than separate and aside, it gives you strength and energy to continue going forward, and even when there are challenges, and clearly when there are good times, it's great. So that ability, I don't want to make light of it. Yes, it's challenging. However, what other choice is there but to be a life? We get to choose every morning, moment, to be a life-giving source or not. So we can be good medicine to each other, and good medicine is anything that helps put in alignment the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. Anyone or anything. So that means every single one of us get to be good medicine. And of course, bad medicine is anyone or anything that puts any of that out of alignment. And so in every moment, we get to choose that and have all the support of the web of life. When you come from that worldview, yes, things are hard, but it doesn't stop you. Instead, You're pulled just like, you know, you're just pulled and compelled to move forward. And the other final thing I want to say on that question is that the other thing that was taught to us, not only and continues to be taught about being one, being connected, all our relations, is that we also make decisions looking seven generations out. Can you imagine if we made every decision thinking about how will this impact seven generations out? Well, we might make some different decisions, or we might pause and think a little bit more about how nonchalant we are about just causing, you know, pointing fingers at other people, doing the kinds of things we don't want done to us, hurting the earth, killing species, all those kinds of things. If we think of decisions, how powerful each of us are, that it can impact our decisions, our thoughts, our actions, seven generations forward.
Well, yeah, and we'd need to think about that more often. They certainly do it in China and in Japan. You know, they have this long-term thinking. You look at the West, you look at America and England, for example. You know, a party may be in for 4 years. What can they possibly accomplish? What do they care about what they accomplish in just 4 years? You know, they're going to move on after that to something else. We need to be thinking about generations upon generations to come.
Yes, and when you think of yourself as part of the Weber life rather than separate, it's just me, then you of course do think about that. And that's not at all to be Pollyannish and to say we don't sometimes make faulty decisions or we realize, oof, that was wrong, but we can correct. We don't have to just stand, you know, because it's about me and I don't want to look wrong or I want to look, you know, or I'm protecting myself. You know, all this stuff, we can just drop these walls of separation. Really understand and really link with other people. I mean, when I was in the depths of feeling all the hurt and mistreatment from my early years and then from the loss of the murder of my father and all this stuff, it was so hard. That was hard. Once I stripped away that illusion, re-looked at my worldview, saw the gifts and the abundance, the gratitude then started flowing about everything that's here, even though I grew up very poor, just seeing all the other gifts. I had the elders there all the time teaching me. I had, you know, just so much great teachers in school and in museums and libraries that I could go and explore and dream about other worlds that may not have the kind of pain I was experiencing. All of those are part of the gifts that are here for all of us. So it's just, it's so important to use that gift of unity to understand we're not alone. We might feel lonely, but we are never alone. That changes everything when we realize that we're all related, that we're all part of one web of life.
You have a doctorate in organizational development, which you bring to your role as a consultant, trainer, and executive coach working with global leaders and teams to promote positive change in the workplace. What was it said in your book somewhere? I think I read the words, when the world gets divisive, you help companies become inclusive. How do you do that? And how are some of these big corporations, you know, many of whom have done things that are not exactly ethical, how are they responding to what you're trying to teach them?
Right. Well, of course, with those that I do work with, I'm not going to say across huge corporations, it's everyone. I'm known for being quite honest. However, there are leaders at various levels inside of organizations who do see that part of businesses aren't these separate entities. There's the problem. Human beings created these entities, and human beings can bring the humanity back into them. So I do see people, leaders, taking hold of these four gifts. Every single one of them, clearly unity to how to more effective work with teams, people from different nationalities, you know, women, men, I seem to take hold of that. But also even forgiving the unforgivable. So many things are caught up for people inside a business where they failed on something and then they let it fester and then they have shame and then they get resentment against the organization or things that they're holding on to that then impact what is going on inside those organizations. So actually, I have found all over the world when I've taught the four gifts, when I've incorporated them in both individual coaching as well as team and whole transformations of cultures, people get it. You know, people say, slow down, I want to write down the four gifts, because they know they're true. These are in each one of us. And that's what I love about true original wisdom, true wisdom keepers. What they're telling us, we'll know. You don't have to just accept this. Allow it to go into your heart and your mind, explore it, decide for yourself. But what you'll find, as I see across the board people doing, is that, yes, this is true. This is who I'm meant to be in the world, not tied up with knots and resentment and anger. And, you know, every time I point at someone, three fingers are pointing back at myself. I see corporations, especially the younger ones, the mid-size, and now even with the large ones, realizing, wait a minute, I can't just rape the earth for the water, because we are destroying the water systems. I've got to put back. And so this whole reciprocity, this principle, this understanding that, you know, we are caught in this mutually beneficial. So to do something destructive is not just to the other. It comes back around immediately or at some point. And so I do see an openness, and it needs to move faster, Sandy. So I'm into that too. It's like, that's when I have to do a little more meditation and get present and keep supporting what I'm doing, what others are doing, collaborating, co-creating. Some of what we're doing right here, right now, is allowing people to explore, to hear the possibilities. And so I see some major corporations using these gifts and finding they make money, that they're actually doing better, because when people know that they're cared for, when people know that they matter, they collaborate much better, they co-create. And so what I find is that, you know, I helped move one organization who was looking at how to reignite the leadership. And we use these gifts and positive psychology, other sciences, and what they moved from $25 billion to $29 billion in a flat market. And when they looked at what they did, they said, it was us. You know, we began using and believing and seeing how these gifts really matter. So, yes, it's they're powerful. And so I'm so grateful to all these elders for reminding us that we have these gifts and to use them.
See, there you've touched right on the crux of the matter, isn't it? Is that, you know, we've lost our ability to show others that we value them. We've lost our ability to think about others in that way. You know, we're very bad at we want to be treated in a particular way, but if we don't treat others in the same way. One of the things that I'm always talking about with clients of mine is resonance marketing, which is about, if you make people, you know, feel that you care about them, and that's genuine and sincere, then they are going to open up completely to you and whatever messages, you know, you want to share with them. But if you're going to treat them like, you know, they don't matter, how could you possibly do business?
Exactly. You've got it. And I truly believe human beings, even the ones that we see, oh my gosh, how could they do that? How could they do that? I believe that in general, human beings, we're not flawed. The kind of hurts and mistreatment, the destructions to ourselves, the species, other species in the earth, it's not because human beings are flawed. It is because we've forgotten. And we need to just remember. And that's going to require all of us, every one of us, as we become awake and understanding that this is not some esoteric thing about, you know, philosophy. And this is all grounded. That's spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. All of this is connected. And I think Earth itself, other human beings, everything is calling for us to be who we're meant to be, you know. And so that's exciting. It's a meaningful time to be alive. And we need to move forward in positive action. So I believe, again, we're not flawed. We've just forgotten, so we can help remind each other. We can remind each other.
So I know that the third gift is the gift of healing, which we'll get into deeper after the break, because we've only got a couple of minutes before break. But how do you, when you're in corporations, when you're talking to business people, many of whom may start off the meeting not even wanting to be there, but having to be, how do you begin to teach them to remember who they are? Where do you start?
Yes, there's four basic elements of healing that I've found from Indigenous. Lots of different methodologies are used, which maybe we'll get into later. But the four things that I teach that are so critical is, first and foremost, is listening. So relearning how to listen, to truly listen. The second is supportive relationships. The third is unconditional love. And the fourth that's present in lots of the healing methodologies that I've seen and studying and working with Indigenous people from different parts of the world is committing to creative, to positive action. So it's not, the healing process requires moving forward, you know, listening, supportive relations, unconditional love, and then moving. The GPS system doesn't work. It's like, okay, I'm here. Why is it? You have to move. So we have to move towards what we want to create, the healing for the healing process to happen. So I spend a lot of time helping people really listen to each other. Sounds very simple, but listening really is something. It requires keeping your mouth quiet. It requires, you know, slowing down your own mind and your own stories. I'm not saying turn it off. These minds are very difficult to manage. However, when we really listen with the softest part of our ear and the softest part of our heart, we begin to connect with that other in a deeper way. And in that process of connecting, we can heal ourselves, heal them, create environments and workplaces where people really are listening to each other. And then it becomes, everything is possible. When we really hear each other, then we can create. And I don't mean that everyone's going to agree with everything they heard when they listen, but if we can give the dignity to every human being that they're worthy of being listened to, that changes things. When someone knows that you truly have heard them, you've listened to them, then they're more willing to take a step too to listen to you and what is happening to you. And that we're not seeing happening as it should be, both in the larger politics as well as inside our homes and inside the workplaces. So listening is a powerful, foundational piece for the healing process to happen.
Absolutely. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with visionary speaker, author, and change agent, Dr. Anita Sanchez, about her book, The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times. We'll be back with more from Dr. Sanchez after the break.
Edge of Conscious Radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Anita Sanchez, over and over again as we're talking, the word that goes through my mind is understanding. You share a story in your book of one particular company that you went into, and I think that there were higher executives and, you know, working people, and some of the working people were of a particular culture, and nobody really understood one another. And it wasn't until they had the opportunity to learn more about each other and why they behaved or, you know, took certain actions, did things in the way that they did, that they began to build that bridge between them, the bridge of understanding. This is, you know, the bottom of it all, isn't it? Is that we've lost our ability to understand one another, accept our differences.
There you go. It's accepting the differences. And the way you accept them is you have to listen and look at them and not judge them as negative, but really just listen and be curious. So it's shifting that from a judgmental point of view to a curious. And when we listen, when we truly are listening, what is we're saying to the other person, whether they're of a different race or culture, is that you matter. How you see the world, what you need matters, just like my needs matter. But you matter enough. Right now, I'm going to be silent and listen to this, listen to you. And we're going to find, go back and forth and do this. And so I know the story you're talking about. And so I love that. It was so powerful. And that intervention is one that, not in the specifics of how it happened there, but one that I remind people about is that in order for us to make the kind of shifts we're talking about the world, where we've had such division, such anger and hurts, and actually against different groups, and in this case I'm talking about racial groups and that, is that we really have to bring not only our dreams of what we want in the future, we have to bring our higher selves. And I'm not talking about in a religious way, although that's not wrong either, but I'm just talking about bringing our higher selves, meaning bringing what it is when we're at our best and our spiritual beings present. And when we do that, we're able to open up, as they did between this group that was, I believe it was Puerto Rican, and then more Northern European, and not mm-hmm. understanding some of the differences. And they, by the end, oh my gosh, one of the white men, while I were doing this training, I had 40 candles lit around the room, very safely within water, so there was no problem of fire. But when at one point in the second day, this man was just beside himself. He finally said, "Stop, I can't take it anymore," the white man. And he looked and he said, "That candle's about to go out." And everybody was sort of like, and then started laughing. But that changed everything, because when I explained what those candles were, was that was just another way to invite our higher selves to be present. And they didn't have to believe in the candles, but those were, again, a way for us to understand that we have to bring it all for us to heal the wounds and to really create and make success, live our lives in the fullest way, knowing that we're all one. And indeed, that's what happened. And I'll tell you, their results were so good. They not only began working such much more effectively, but it just, you know, it went out further out beyond that room to everyone that they touched, and had such respect for each other, because they know that we all have needs. We all have some things that are different ways of doing things. And sometimes it's not that one's right or one wrong. It's just they're different. And we don't have to be scared of that difference. We just need to listen to understand it, and then together figure out how we're going to go forward, whether it's doing one versus the other, going back and forth. But it's clearly not more separation. It's really understanding that we have everything we need to be able to resolve these issues between ourselves and others if we choose to do so. If we choose to use the gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we, you know, stop seeing others as different and start seeing where we have similarities, you know, that person is a parent just like me. That person has children that they love just like I love my children, etc. Instead of you know, looking at all the things that the skin colour, the job that somebody does, the country they live in, the way they speak, all of those things that we allow to divide us.
Yes, exactly. And so what I found in my work, again, every time I see separation, I look, what is the reason for this separation? What is my underlying assumption? So it changed my work decades ago, because I teach diversity inclusion. I help people fall in love with each other in the workplace and in the communities. But what I found out in that process is not just teaching about the differences, it's teaching about the similarities. We've got to hold it all. We have the capacity as human beings, as whole human beings, to hold our similarities and our differences. And with that, we're really then treating each other with the dignity, the innate worthiness that we all deserve. And then we can move forward. It's such a, it makes it so much easier to move through then all the divisions and things that we've had when we really take a hold of all of it, similarities and the differences.
So what is, you know, we have the four gifts, and, you know, the final gift is hope. One could be forgiven for thinking maybe the world has lost its hope. But clearly, you know, there are people like you, and there's the prophecy, and there are all of the elders and everybody who is doing something to change the world for the better. So there must be hope. What have you noticed in regard to hope over the nearly 40 years that you've been traveling the world, speaking to all kinds of people about this?
Yeah. Well, what I have found is it truly is an energy source. And I know there's writers now and scientists and social scientists say, oh, give up on that hope stuff. That just has people sit back. Well, they're talking about a hope that's very different than the indigenous wisdom keepers as we talk about hope and use today in the context of day. And for me, it's hope is this innate energy source that allows one to dream, to see through no matter any facts of the contrary, all the difficulties, the possibility, the vision of something else. That's what this whole prophecy came from, was this vision and the spirit saying, oh, these use these four gifts. So when we have hope, when we choose to use hope, because we can't, no one can take hope away. And this is what's the amazing thing about indigenous people that I just love about our people, is that even in the most devastating situations, they still have hope. They go, hey, we wake up and we're taught to look at the morning star, which of course is the planet Venus. It's a new day. We're taught to go out and look at the trees and sit on the earth and connect and give gratitude before we drink that glass of water, because we're water. And what happens is that we're able to reignite the hope. Only we can give it away. It is an energy source. And so one of the practices that, you know, I was taught to do very early was being thankful every day. And, you know, from my story, there were some days that were pretty bad, but it was still like, well, the sun is shining, or it's raining, oh my gosh, or I get to walk to the library today and read some books, you know, that'll spur me on to other possibilities, whatever it is. And so this hope is so important. And I am seeing now people acting as if it doesn't exist, that it's a fantasy. It's not. And if we look at all the different things that we've created in technology and science and health, most of those came from a vision, from a sense of, you know, might use a scientific process, but there was some leap in there. I know it's not working, but I'm going to try another test, and I'm going to do another test. And why? Because hope, when you have that hope in you, it pulls you. It's not the work of like pushing a big old boulder up the hill. It actually pulls you towards it, and then you find others. So I think there's a reigniting of hope in action, not just sitting back, but hope, get in action. And it leads me to a quick story. A friend of mine was with the Dalai Lama a number of years ago, and they were meeting about water issues and just talking in prayer meditation for this weekend in Asia. And at the end of the weekend, the Dalai Lama looked at all of them and said, and this was a good weekend, wasn't it? And they're all like, oh my gosh, this was so powerful and beautiful. I mean, I can't even imagine. I've never spent time with the Dalai Lama. And he said, yes. So you can go away and look back at this and say, oh, yes, wasn't this just a wonderful weekend of meditation and you know, in discussion, and or you go out and get into action, and it was more than just a wonderful weekend. And that's what hope allows you to do, is to keep going forward in spite of what difficulties or challenges there are, because you have this image, and your image of whatever it is, you know, and her, and healing the earth, or healing your family relationships, or making a stronger community of diverse people inside of an organization, whatever it is, that hope is an energy source that is infinite, and we get to choose to use it.
You telling the story of the Dalai Lama reminds me of one of the stories in the book that I want you to share with our listeners, when you were at an event in a hotel and you had an unexpected visitor brought into the room. Tell us about that.
Yes. Oh, that was wonderful. Yeah, it was one during when I was doing a 5-day program for corporations, AT&T, DuPont, and Digital Equipment Corp. And turns out Bishop Tutu was in the building. And so he actually knew what we were doing in that room, and he came down and walked in on the second day in the middle of a lot of race discussions, and it was really getting deep. And he walks in, and of course it was post-apartheid, where the Reconciliation Commission started, had already begun. So he spoke to us. Everybody was so silent. He was just 7+ minutes. I just was on every word he said. And then he left the room, and I left as one of the trainers with him, just to thank him and stuff. And then he turned, and with this little twinkle, he's a small man with huge energy, and he said, "Well, you've been doing this a long time." And me and my other colleague were like, "Yes." And he says, "So I ask you, what's next? Reconciliation is good. What's next?"
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, that just went through my heart. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, it's co-creation. See, we're spending all this time on the problem, but what might we do if we could move this, if we could open up the possibility? We could create together. We could solve things together. Instead of continually spiraling down the problem, we can look at the solutions. We can be solutionaries together. And I'll never forget his twinkle. I'm so glad he's still around sharing his wisdom here and now. But, yeah, that was just a powerful time, as you can imagine, for someone who trains in diversity and inclusion to have Bishop Tutu, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, walk into your room with 70 people and just transform by his very being as well as his words. And each of us can do that in our way. Each of us have, again, that capacity to be good medicine to ourselves and to each other and the earth.
And there are many organizations doing great work. I know that you're a board member of the Pachamama Alliance. You guide journeys into the Amazon rainforest. You take business people and families to learn about their connection to spirit, the earth, and indigenous people, and also to build understanding of other cultures and understanding of the importance of preserving those cultures. All of that must give you great reason for hope.
But oh, yes.
The question.
Go ahead.
No, please go.
No, I said, I just love your interviewing, though, so I didn't want to cut you off. Yes, but what you, the image got in my head about being there, and what we know about these sacred headwaters of the Amazon, where I've been for 10 years taking people, and Pachamama Alliance has been taking for 20 some years, is that, you know, you could say, oh, that's over there. But, of course, science is letting us know what the indigenous people always knew. No, it's not just over there. It's part of a whole web of life. And now scientists are saying, okay, biodiversity is so critical. And this one place, this four last rainforests are so critical for life on Earth. But this one, the sacred headwaters, every day the canopy of clouds from this rain going in this rainforest, the water that comes off of that canopy is more water than from the start of the Amazon in the Andes to where it flows out into the ocean in Brazil. And that water, that what they call floating rivers, impacts the weather all over the earth. And so when we say we need to understand these cultures who've been preserving this for us, we need to protect this rainforest, not, it's for all of us. Again, yes. There's no separation. What's happening? So you caught me, that image. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, I'm so excited that we get to, through the Pachamama Alliance in the Sacred Headwaters Initiative look at the permanent preservation of that for all humanity, for all humankind, now and in future. So we can only know that by listening to the Wisdom Keepers, opening our own hearts and minds to who we truly are, and making those connections wherever we can to ourselves and to each other around the world. And so I know good things are happening, and there are major challenges. However, when we come together with the hope and action, yes, and have all these different realms coming together, science and the others, we can do this. We as you said, there are many organizations, people, and we can and we are doing this. Oh, it just makes me excited. The young people is the next image in my head. Just, you see it, Sandy, all the young people who are marching, you know, to preserve the earth and change global warming, and that Greta Thunberg talking, and the trash tag movement. Now, people, young people taking pictures on Instagram of a mess. You know, people who've just been disrespectful, and then they take a second picture where they cleaned it all up. This is what I'm talking about. No action is too small or too big. It's just about doing whatever is each of ours to do. And then when we do it together, we're even more amazing.
And I'm going to have to stop you now, unfortunately, because we're almost at the end of the show. I love your passion. I love your commitment. I love your book. Dr. Anita Sanchez, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times is published by Simon & Schuster. For more information about the book, visit foursacredgifts.com, and you can watch Dr. Sanchez's TEDx talk, Humanity's Hope, Connecting People, Earth and Spirit, on her website at anita-sanchez.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.